Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
That a jury of 11 whites and one black in the deep south stood up in the courtroom and said that black lives do matter.
Relief tonight for the family of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia after a jury found the three defendants guilty on most charges in the murder trial. Only one, Travis McMichael, was found guilty on all charges, including malice murder. The young black man was killed while jogging in a neighborhood in Brunswick, Georgia last year. Attorneys for the three white men say it was self-defense when Arbery resisted what they called a citizen's arrest. Tonight, we take a look at the verdict and the issues raised by this trial watched by the nation. Joining me tonight to talk about this are trial attorney A. Scott Bolden and Debbie Hines, a former Baltimore City prosecutor. What do you think? I want to hear from you tonight. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Scott, Debbie, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you
for having me.
Debbie, let me ask you first, were you surprised at the verdict?
Oh, no. I was shocked at the verdict. I was literally watching it in a car, and I expected it to be all not guilties. I mean, not that it should have been all not guilties, but that's what we've come to almost expect, but I was hoping for the best. And so when they read the first guilty on malice murder, I literally screamed in my car. I was so shocked.
Yeah. What about you, Scott? Shocked? Surprised?
I was relieved, actually. And I was mad at myself for being relieved because this should have been a no-brainer, this case, this verdict, based on the facts and based on what I had observed. But I was relieved because we know that the criminal justice system has two forms of justice. At least it feels that way. As a practicing lawyer, I believe in one criminal justice system. But the public perception, based on jury verdicts over decades, if not generations, has had justice perception-wise for white America and justice for just us, black America. And that's a reality in the minds of many. And I was mad at myself for being relieved, but unfortunately I was and had to be like so many other Americans. But I was very proud of the jury. And while race was at the base of so much of this trial, in and outside the courtroom, the prosecutors didn't make race the question, ignored the race baiting by the defense lawyers, had a very practical, factual, legal arguments to the jury, and stayed focused on a very point-by-point counterpoint for each of these defendants for all eight or nine of these charges. And essentially message to this jury, listen, this isn't about race. This is about right or wrong. Murder is murder. And it's okay. It's okay here in the Deep South for you to do your job, do justice, and convict these three men for their bad acts. And I think that argument won over more so than the defense arguments that were personal, petty, and race-based. And I think the jury didn't want to be tied to race or be tied to that negative perception as the world was watching them do their work.
You know, the lead prosecutor, Linda Donikoski, made a statement, a short statement after the trial was over. Debbie, I'm going to play it and I want you to react to what she said.
And the verdict today was a verdict based on the facts.
Yes.
Based on the evidence.
Yes.
And that was our goal, was to bring that to that jury so that they could do the right thing.
You did.
Because the jury system works in this country. Mm-hmm. And when you present the truth to people and they see it, they will do the right thing.
They sure.
That's what this jury did today
That's right.
In getting justice for Ahmaud Arbery.
Your thoughts about the job that she did?
I think she did an excellent job, but one thing that I unfortunately would take reference to her is that the jury system does not work in this country. And that is why Scott said he was relieved, and that's why I said I was shocked Because the jury system, we know that the jury system doesn't work. You don't have to be a black attorney practicing in a courtroom to basically know that. And so in most other cases like this, the facts are presented, evidence is presented, and it always, usually, not always, it usually goes the other way when it is race involved. But I do think she did an excellent job of putting on the case. But you have to understand, this case was really, when I say I was shocked, this case was really an uphill battle. There were four prosecutors before the charges were filed. One prosecutor had to be indicted because she was chummy buddies with one of the defendants in this case and did not indict. And originally did not indict on the cases. And then you have the judge in this case, and this is where I had the most angst about, because the judge is supposed to be fair and impartial, and this judge was anything but fair and impartial. He let go of 11 black jurors, even when he said, well, the defense did strike them, and his words were intentional discrimination, but he's just going to let that go and seat only one black juror. So you had a jury that was comprised of 11 whites and one black person. And that shows that the system does not work. But it worked in this instance, and the jury did the right thing. They listened to the evidence. They did not believe the defendants. And they came up with what I believe was a just verdict in this case. But it was not an easy climb because it took so long just to get an indictment.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the verdict and the issues in the Ahmaud Arbery trial today. Of course, all three of the defendants convicted on most of the charges against them. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810. So I want to play the entire first list of verdict for Travis McMichael, just Travis McMichael, because he was convicted on all charges. And if you will indulge me, Debbie, because all three men had the same nine charges. And so we are talking about 27 charges in all, nine each. And for the folks in the back who didn't go to law school, like my esteemed guests on this program, I need you to kind of walk us through. But this is the way it was read, and it's been edited for brevity. But I want you to walk us through this, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
The state of Georgia versus Travis McMichael, count one, malice murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Oh, woo! Count two, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count three, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count four, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count five, felony murder. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count six, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count seven, aggravated assault. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count eight, false imprisonment. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty. Count nine, criminal attempt to commit a felony. We, the jury, find the defendant, Travis McMichael, guilty.
So, as I said in the beginning, Debbie, we have nine charges. He was guilty of all of them. And so just kind of walk us through here, because malice murder, Travis McMichael was the one who was wielding the shotgun, and he was the one who shot Ahmaud Arbery three times, killing him. What is malice murder?
So in Georgia, they don't have what we commonly are used to hearing, which is first-degree murder, second-degree murder. Georgia doesn't break it down into degrees. So malice murder in the state of Georgia is murder that you're committing with the intent to kill. Not any premeditation, but just the intent to kill. So that's why more than likely the jury found Travis guilty of the intent to kill, because he's the one that's wielding the shotgun. Or at least that's how I believe it shook out, that he was the only one who was found guilty of malice murder.
Mm-hmm. And then we have four counts of felony murder, count 2, 3, 4, and 5. Why 2, 3, 4, and 5? Why four counts of felony murder?
So felony murder is one that is in most jurisdictions. So felony murder is, you know, it's simple if you're an attorney. I was going to say it's simple, but felony murder is a murder that's committed while you were committing a felony. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you intended to kill someone, but you were committing a felony and someone died. So the common law school way to explain it is, if you go in and you're intending to burglarize or rob someone, but you're not intending to kill them, and in the process the gun goes off and they die, you'll be charged with felony murder because you were committing a felony. So in this case, there are four felonies that were committed. So it's only one person that died, but there are four felonies that were committed. And that's the aggravated, the two counts of aggravated assault, the false imprisonment, and the criminal intent to commit a felony. And so for each one of those crimes, it's attaching to the felony murder, which is giving it, you know, four counts of felony murder. Not four individuals died, but you did four felonies, and so you're going to be charged with felony murders in four counts.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got aggravated assault. You've got two counts of those. And then you've got false imprisonment and criminal attempt at false imprisonment. He was guilty of all four of those as well.
Right. So aggravated assault in Georgia is a felony, and it's exactly what it means, except that someone did die. That's how they're charging it, as before death. The false imprisonment is one that is more common that people don't fully understand. And so when they were boxing Ahmaud Arbery in with the trucks and they're running after him and they're basically cornering him like they did, like he was an animal or a runaway slave, that's the false imprisonment. You cannot hold anyone against their will, which is what they did when they boxed him in with both of the vehicles, and they boxed him in, you know, with their cells before they shot and killed him. That's where you come about with the false imprisonment, which is a felony.
Mm-hmm. You know, Scott, his father, Travis's father, Greg, was found guilty on all counts with the exception of malice murder. That was pretty easy. That was kind of easy in that. He was in the back of the truck. He didn't shoot Ahmaud Arbery, so that was pretty easy. But William Roddy Bryant, he was found not guilty of malice murder, not guilty of the first felony murder, and on count. Don't start me the line here, because I mean there's so many counts here. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Aggravated assault. Laundry list of counts here. Not guilty, but then, you know, Scott guilty on all the others, and he was the one who took the video. And so for a lot of people, you know, Scott, all of this really kind of counterintuitive. Were not for him taking the video, we may not have been here, which is interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, and he and his lawyer really wanted to argue that they were the least culpable. In fact, he was just an innocent bystander. But he's the one that took the video. And the jury had a very... These decisions by the jury were very practical.
Mm-hmm.
Followed how the prosecution's case was presented, in a very factual base to the point approach. He didn't pull the trigger. And so the only one that was convicted of malice murder under my colleague's definition, and I agree with her, was the shooter. After that, you have felony murder because the other two did engage in felonies, whether it was aggravated assault with their trucks as weapons, whether it was false imprisonment in regard to not only their trucks but also how they had cornered him. Once you had these felonies proven beyond a reasonable doubt and a murder had occurred, then you had to find the other two guilty of felony murder. And once you got felony murder, which all of them are facing life imprisonment, and not the death penalty, because under Georgia, many, you've got to either kill a police officer or there's got to be some type of kidnapping involved. There's certain pieces for the death penalty here, and the government, the prosecution, just didn't ask for it. Hold that point.
Don't forget it, because I do want you to pick that up after this short break. Also, we're going to talk to Pam and Matthew, both of them calling from Maryland. We have a lot to dissect as it relates to the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial today. Three convictions on almost all counts. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This continues on our other channels in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are breaking down the issues surrounding the Ahmaud Arbery verdict and trial today. My guests are trial attorney A. Scott Bolden and Debbie Hines, former Baltimore City prosecutor. If you have comments or questions, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Scott, please go ahead and make your point that you were making before the break.
The other point that I was going to make was that the defendants are all going to appeal these decisions. The point I was making about the government prosecutor did not ask for the death penalty, but this case is far from over, because I think the defense in this case is going to appeal issues such as the judge ruled that they could not bring in Arbery's criminal record, if you will. It was too prejudicial versus probative value. Secondly, the issues of whether you could keep the black ministers out of the audience, right? That will be appealed. And then the other issue that will certainly be appealed will be the jury selection piece. That while the judge ruled in their favor, but the judge also conceded that these black jurors were put off the jury because they were black. That's a Batson violation, but for whatever reason, that was never completely dealt with. And so there are a lot of appellate issues here, and so we're going to hear a lot about it, including the whole sentencing process that we're going to go through. And then there's a federal case.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Yeah.
That the feds are going to be trying these three defendants on. So a lot of different activity, parallel proceedings, and there will be an appeal of these issues. So we're going to be hearing more and more about these three defendants and this case. And if any of the convictions are overturned by the Georgia Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals, then certainly, God forbid, we may be at square one again. So we'll have to watch this closely.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Pam. What's on your mind? Pam, turn your radio down. Go right ahead, please. Pam, are you there? I know you're listening to your radio. Go ahead, Pam. Pam, tell you what, give me a call back. Let's go to Matthew. Matthew, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm rejoicing and very excited about the verdict. But the problem I have is with us. By tonight, we're going to be shooting each other, which is what disturbs me the most.
What are you talking about, Matthew? I need to stay on point. So we're talking about Ahmaud Arbery, unless you're talking about that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, go right ahead.
I'm pleased and very excited about the verdict. I couldn't keep the tears back. But the problem we need to do is come together and stop hurting each other. And I'm very excited about the verdict.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your point. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Okay, so Here's the other thing, and Scott talked about this, and Debbie, I want you to, you know, to also discuss this, because the federal case, the jury for the federal civil rights trial will be selected. It begins on February 7th. So that's barely 3 months. That's less than 3 months from now. This is in pretty much the same community, not just in Glynn County, a much wider area, a much wider rural community. But this is a civil rights trial. It's my understanding that this is going to have to do with the violation of Ahmaud Arbery's civil rights, and indeed as it relates to, among other things, denying him use of a public road and some other things. How might you see something like that play out in a community where overtones and undertones of race were constantly hanging over this trial?
Well, I mean, each case stands on its own. Usually the federal cases are a little bit more difficult to prove than the state cases. But, you know, it was no slam dunk in terms of this case, because the jurisdiction that is the county where it was tried in was 69% white and 27% black. So I don't think it's going to be that much different of a makeup in terms of the federal prosecution's trial. But the federal prosecution's case is basically security, is how I look at it. It's basically security in the event that the state case is overturned on appeal. That being said, I think the state case is least likely to be overturned on appeal for the reasons that I said earlier about the judge. I mean, the judge bent over backwards to basically support the defense and what they wanted, with the exclusion of kicking out the black pastors. He did everything he could do. The jury is the most important thing, in addition to the jury instructions in the case, and he basically denied the state the right to have the jurors that should have been on that jury, the 11 black jurors, that potential jurors that were kicked off the jury, even though, as Scott said, it's what we call a Batson challenge, where the Supreme Court says you cannot exclude people from a jury on account of race, and this judge admitted that. So I think it's least likely in terms of the appeal to actually work for the defense. But the federal case is going to be security for them.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found particularly curious, and I think this was one of the things that this is not a point of fact, but this is the other issue that was raised, and this is about race. This is about the Kevin Goff thing. This is the one of the defense attorneys that was raised. This is the black pastor issue that came up, and I must say that even in 2021, that someone would raise the issue about whether or not black pastors can be in a courtroom. And to raise this issue on several occasions in open court, I still find that fascinating, even as you talk about vigorously defending your client. Scott, do you have any feeling at all that the presence of Jesse Jackson, of Al Sharpton, or the 500 black pastors who showed up after those comments were made in any way, shape, or form influenced the jury?
Well, the arguments weren't done in front of the jury, but the presence of Reverend Jackson and the other ministers and Al Sharpton, they had every right to be there as a member of the public. And to deny them access would to be denying them their civil rights, human rights, and constitutional rights to be present. They weren't on the jury. They didn't have signs up or hats up that said free Ahmaud Arbery. And so, you know, the defense attorney's white privilege, his white ignorance, and his white racism led him to raise that as an objection again, because his white privilege says that that black people who are civil rights advocates and human rights advocates somehow are stand for what's wrong with the justice system or what's wrong with America, and they could unduly influence a jury that was sequestered simply by their presence. It's an ignorant argument. It's an irrelevant argument. It's a baseless argument. It's a specious argument. And the judge properly denied that motion to bar these ministers from being present in the audience. And I watched this. The defense attorney who made that argument and made that motion, he knew he was going to lose that motion. But again, he's injecting race into this case because race and racism, in his view, was the only thing, or vis-a-vis jury nullification, was going to be his strongest argument. These were bad facts for the defense. My colleague is right. It took a lot. This was not an easy case to get to trial, for sure. But I do think during the trial, the prosecution did a really, really good job, and that the facts, if you followed the facts and matched them to the law in a very practical way, then these convictions are going to stand up, and regardless of the appeal. So that's what I think about the baseless motion, the argument that they shouldn't be, black ministers shouldn't be allowed into the courtroom.
Debbie, what do you think is going to happen to the prosecutor who herself is now facing charges in relation to the original crime, the one who had a working relationship with Greg McMichael when this case first came to light?
Well, hopefully in her favor, she might want to consider taking a plea bargain, just like many of the black defendants in this country do. And here's the reason why. Seriously, here's the reason why. So it's not just that he worked in the office with the former DA or prosecutor. He worked in the office, and then after his son killed Ahmaud Arbery, he leaves a message on the DA's cell phone basically saying that, oh, you know, like there was a little incident where someone got killed and he was involved in it, and he was calling her to ask for her advice. He's the prosecutor. He should have been calling a criminal defense attorney. But at the end of the day, there's no indication that she called him back by way of phone records. But the fact that she did not prosecute and she had a close tie and a connection to someone that was involved in a murder case who was a close colleague and had worked in her office should have been reason enough that she should have recused herself and not had anything to do with the case instead of deciding that, oh, we're just not going to move forward on it.
Well, but it's worse than that, though, Harold, if I may. She not only kept the case, I don't think she ever recused herself. I mean, she did it later when she had no choice, but she directed and ordered the police not to make an arrest in the case, despite those conflicts of interest and despite the availability and her review of the tape. The tape was suppressed in the sense that the government had it, obviously. The third defendant had it, and they started distributing it. But without that tape, we wouldn't be here talking. We wouldn't have any justice for Ahmaud Arbery. And so I think my colleague is right. It'd be great if she took a plea bargain, because I got to tell you, with this conviction, life just got really harder for her. This isn't some bar complaint where she can lose her license. They have criminally indicted her, and while none of us know all the evidence against her other than what's been made public, this is a serious crime, obstruction of justice. Well, I can't remember exactly what the charge is, but it has to do with how she directed the police not to make an arrest despite and in the face of this overwhelming evidence that something really went bad here. She accepted the citizen's arrest argument, and basically it moved on from it. The other interesting part is there's a second prosecutor who wrote this memo absolving the three defendants of any wrongdoing at the time that he recused himself. I don't think he's been criminally prosecuted yet, but he certainly, and he's still in the prosecutor's office, I think. And so one thing the public ought to watch here is what happens to him, because he may be the next one to be criminally indicted.
And that's, and I think that the bigger picture is when we look at how this case came about, that, and allow me to use, you know, layman's terms, but for the video, and this has jumped around so much, we can, you know, we can talk about the obstruction of justice. We can talk about suppression of evidence. But to me, this smacks of corruption. And I think that there is a bigger issue here. And allow my law and order hat to, you know, to move forward.
Okay, but just this one time, Harold.
Yeah,
one
just you know, allow me to say dang, dang, because it just, you know, because to me, if, as I said, yeah, you know, for the, you know, I think for Lady Justice, for the Aubrey family, for Black people, and the imagery, the horrific imagery that we saw on that video, today is a good day. But I would also argue that more broadly, I think that there needs to be some poking and prodding around to find out, you know, what else is going on. They say that, you know, the fish stinks from the head, but I would also argue there are a lot of fish in the net that still have yet to be poked at.
Who do you want to answer that question?
It doesn't matter.
Here's what I do want to say, and this is, may not be an answer. This is probably not an answer to the question. I'll leave that for Scott. But what I do want to say, because one of the things that we haven't discussed, and this has to be said, is that what these defendants have been, what they've been found guilty of, they're facing life in prison with or without parole. And even if under Georgia statute, if they get life in prison with parole under Georgia, they have to serve 30 years. So for those two older gentlemen, it is a life sentence. So yeah, we can't lose sight of that.
I agree.
I completely agree. I think prosecutorial reform is ripe for criminal justice, within criminal justice reform. It doesn't look like the feds or those White House are going to get criminal justice reform done. But it goes beyond police shootings where most of us believe, or the right-thinking most of us believe, that independent commissions ought to review and investigate police shootings, whether they're young Black men, white men, or brown men. And the other thing this situation in Georgia highlights from these prosecutors, that one indicted, one has recused himself, is the enormous amount of discretion local and state and federal prosecutors have. It's enormous. It's a difference maker. And so we've got to figure out a way, and Georgia is going to struggle with this, is struggling with this right now, is what reforms do you put in place whereby you don't infringe on reasonable discretion by prosecutors who were elected to exercise judgment and discretion in who they prosecute and who they don't. But more importantly, how do you do that while enforcing the law and making sure that those people, those prosecutors who are elected, are of good character and make race-blind decisions? And every state needs to not only do that, but look at independent commissions and review. There has to be a balance. But lastly and most importantly, when our people and our communities of color go to the polls, you got to vote up and down ballot, because we are the ones electing these local and state prosecutors, and we want someone, doesn't have to look like us, but has to be someone that shares our experiences and our values. whether they're a progressive prosecutor or not, and our value of fairness, justice, and equality as we see it, as we feel it, and as we lived it, that's important, and that comes from our power to vote. And so that's another, yet another reason why our communities need to come out and vote every time, every year there's an election.
I do want to go back to one point, and this has to do with the imagery, and this is for both of you, but I'll start with Debbie. Does this trial and the outcome today, is this, Debbie, the I told you so moment from black folks to white folks, the running wild black, driving wild black, living wild black moment?
No, because most white folks still don't get it. I mean, they look at this as one case. This is my thinking. They look at it as what happened to Ahmaud Arbery. They don't look at it as what happens in the world. And so the thing about what you're saying hits so close to home for me as a black woman, because I'm a runner. I've run five mm-hmm. marathons. So I could be mm-hmm. Ahmaud Arbery. I'm serious. Yep. And there are times that since, you know, in the last years with the Trump era, when I have gone out to run, I'm in a new neighborhood for me. And so I actually have thought about not having anything to do with him, because it was before then, if I should run down certain streets, because I have to look and see if it's a black person lives there, because I'm no longer sure because I'm in a new location. And so I don't think that the white America really gets that how entrenched all these things really, really are in America with black Americans.
Yeah, no question about that. I completely agree. And with the videos that we've seen over the last 5 years or 10 years, I must tell you, it has made black America rethink itself about what it's doing running or running while black, living while black. At the same time, I don't believe that white America has progressed as much as black America has in trying to protect itself. That means they can certainly appreciate an egregious case like Arbery or other cases, a couple of cases in Minnesota. But they still aren't willing to give up that white privileged thinking that how they perceive black people, that they don't see us as human beings, they don't see us as their equal, and they don't see us as in the same light that they would see a white citizen running or bird watching or walking through a store. And that's really, really important, because the egregious cases are the deadly cases, but in 25 plus years, we're going to be a country of color. What does that mean? And what's that going to mean for America and all of this melting pot, if you will, of cultures that we have? And so I don't think white Americans see race, because they've never been a victim of racism. They don't really haven't confronted it, nor have we confronted slavery and the years of racial oppression of black people. We can't even have a conversation about it, let alone figure out what the truth or agree on the truth. And so there's a lot of work to be done in connection to racial relations in this country that we are not having. Half the country voted for Donald Trump. You can't have a race relation conversation with Donald Trump or his hardcore supporters. And so whoever's in the White House, it really doesn't matter. We've got to heal, both of us, both groups, from slavery and racial oppression and Jim Crow and the Civil Rights Movement. And both sides, in many respects, are terribly afraid of having that hard conversation. But we got to have those hard conversations, including about the criminal justice system and making it one versus two systems.
Yeah. Let's talk to Wanda calling from Upper Marlboro. Wanda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm listening to everyone, and I don't know. I'm just kind of confused, because I know that there are certain, you know, black folks that, I'm a black woman. I don't want to be around. I'm sorry.
You don't want to what?
Be around. I don't want to be around them, you know, and so.
Around what? You said there's.
The foolishness and the. Around black people.
Oh, okay.
There are some black people I do not want to be around. And I guess my point is there are white people who feel the same way that we do about other white people. And as long as we keep this them, they, us, them, you know, we gotta find a way to come together on one accord. As long as we are dividing, and it's not us dividing, but I'm saying just as long as there is division, then we'll never solve this. It'll never be solved because it's them against us. It's always they and us. Where is, because, you know, even in this case today, there were 11, from my understanding, white individuals on the jury.
Yes.
And one African-American man. Now, that could have easily gone the other way. But they're tired of it, too. I have friends who are white, and they are tired of it, too. They are embarrassed by the insurrection. They're embarrassed by this young man just getting off for killing all the people during the protest. They're embarrassed by this stuff. It's not them and us and they. It sounds like, to me, it's getting to the point where it's the sane against the insane and those who feel that they are privileged to do this, and they're not all white. I don't know. I'm just, it's just a frustrating topic, but it, you know, like your guest just said, it has to be dealt with. It has to be, or else we are all doomed. That's what's going to happen eventually.
So Wanda, I see your white people embarrassment and tired of it, and I will raise you a Unite the Right split verdict yesterday. In Charlottesville, Virginia, a $25 million plus verdict where the plaintiffs in that case may never see that money. I will raise you, as Scott just said, half the country voting for Donald Trump, and some of them when we covered the election of 2020, despite what he said, some of the horrific, arguably racist things that he said about people of color, specifically brown people. And I interviewed people who were Latinx who voted for him.
I feel that he's able to do that because he is allowed to do that. So this goes all the way back to voting, like you said. We vote. Everyone came out for Obama. Yeah, great. That's wonderful. But guess what? His hands were tied because we didn't come out for the primary election. The other, the more important election.
I'm not talking about the political process. I'm talking about people who vote for people who say things against them. That's what I'm talking about.
And it's
a conundrum, and that's the point that I'm making.
We feel that he's going to do this and that and all these promises, and that, you know, there's a way to persuade people over to your thinking and your way because you promise them, you know, this and that and the other. But aside from that, we have to look at the fact that, we everyone's taunting, oh yeah, Black Lives Matter, yay, let's go riot, you know, let's go protest. But guess what? Black lives matter to everybody but black people. We are out here killing each other at an alarming rate.
Well, let me stop you there before we get too far down into the weeds, and I'm running out of time. I would just say that I hope that as a result of today, that more people, black, white, and other, are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that there is a lesson that comes out of this Ahmaud Arbery verdict. Wanda from Upper Marlboro, thank you so much for talking to us tonight, and happy Thanksgiving to you. Debbie Hines, A. Scott Bolden, thank you for your big brains. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Scott, Debbie, please save me a plate. Happy
Thanksgiving. And you do the same, girl.
I'm telling you, I'm going to save you a plate. I don't cook.
Yes, I know. There you go. Take care. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, November 24th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.